Over the past year, there's been something like 1 million workers laid off, and that's a lot of people. At the same time, there are many people graduating from schools this time of the year and looking for maybe that first job, or maybe they went back to school to get some retraining, and they're looking in a sort of a totally different area. Whatever the case, if you're thinking about job hunting, maybe doing some career planning, or maybe you have a relative who's in that process, I hope you stay with us, because Sybil Presbridge is our guest. She's a senior counselor in adult and student services in the Division of Continuing Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's our guest for the next 45 minutes or so to talk with you and with me about career planning and job searches. So if you have a question or a comment in those areas, maybe you're on the other side, maybe you're an employer, we'd welcome your input too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you like, you can email us, and that is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Sybil, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Why don't you talk first about your role? You're a senior counselor. What do you do?
Well, as a counselor in the Adult and Student Services Office, I provide educational and career counseling to community adults. Our services are geared towards people who are thinking about a career change, maybe returning to school, maybe starting work on another degree, and helping them execute some kind of a career transition.
And what are the typical concerns, or what are the typical issues that you have to deal with right off the bat with someone?
Well, the typical ranges from someone who maybe has been downsized, laid off, let go for whatever reason, and is not that interested in making a change, but is in a situation where they have to do that, to someone who is saying, I'm in a position where I really need to do something different. I've never enjoyed my career, but I have no idea what I want to do with the rest of my life. So it's a wide range of issues that come up, and we try to provide services to all those people.
So is it a question of, for you then, it's got to be a question of sort of help, it's almost a psychologist in a way, in terms of helping a person decide what he or she is, kind of where they want to go with their life in some cases.
That's true. That's right. That's exactly what we do.
Well, I'll tell you what, Melissa in Reedsburg may have a question along those lines, so let's go to her. Hi, Melissa. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I am currently employed. I like my job very, very much. When I was hired this last year, I'm in sales, and they took part of the territory away from me, you know, away from the old rep, but before they hired me. I would like to get that back. How do I go about that? And a caveat to that is the boss's daughter got it.
This requires a lot of finesse, if I'm not mistaken, Sybil.
That is exactly right. I would ask you a couple questions. You know, what's the relationship like with your supervisor? What was the rationale for the change initially? Do you have the track record for going to them and making the proposal? I think when you go to an employer to propose some sort of a change like that, you need to figure out kind of what's a win-win here for them. If you do this, does that mean, does the boss's daughter get fired herself? Mm-hmm. So I think you've got to be pretty careful about what you do. But I think if you can figure out a way to talk about the benefits to the organization and the rationale for doing it and why it would benefit the organization, as opposed to going to them and saying, I need the extra territory because I need the income myself, or focusing on more of your needs, what you should be doing is focusing on what are their needs and how can this change help them meet their needs.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. So a little bit of research required there in a way, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Does it make a difference that in an economic slowdown how you go about looking for jobs?
Well, I think when things are slower, what you can anticipate is the search is going to take longer. I think that in general the rules apply, the same strategies and tactics apply, but I think you have to accept the fact that this is going to be an employer's market, and so this is a time to maybe be even more diligent about making sure your resume has no typographical errors, no mistakes, that you are really using your network effectively. So if anything, I think the rules apply, but even to a greater degree. And so you really need to be able to get very intense about your job search, expect that it's going to last a little bit longer and be ready for that. But I don't think the rules actually are different.
You know, I sit myself over the course of any year, I'm probably on four or five jobs. You know, I'm on a committee that is looking to hire someone, and it always surprises me the number of resumes, for example, that come in with a grammatical error or a typo, or the letter is contains typos, and we, you know, you sort of those kind of get set aside right away.
That's exactly what's going to happen. So if you know that you're going to be sending something in, you need to have multiple people look at that. If you know that writing is not your strength, then I would encourage you to find some resources in your community where you can get someone to look at it who is a good writer. That might be the local English teacher at the high school. It might be someone at your local job center, but you need to get multiple eyes looking at it. I think when you work on your resume, you spend so much time looking at it that eventually you start to miss some of the details, like the grammar and the spelling and the typos. So get someone else to take a look at it.
And just aside from that, when we let's talk a little bit about resumes while we're on that topic. I often wonder, when people are listing their jobs, the jobs that they've held, for example, prior to, one of the things that I notice is that oftentimes they don't do a good enough job telling me what they made of that job or what kinds of how they contributed in that job. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the job, if it's a, you know, sometimes if we're students, that maybe they were a waitress or a waiter or something like that. So it's not at all related to maybe the job apparent, but still.
When a person lists their jobs on their resume, instead of focusing on just what were my responsibilities, focus on what were my accomplishments. So if you were a waitress, you know, did you get great reviews from customers? Were there repeat customers that came and asked specifically to sit in your section because you were so good at your job? You know, did you get more tips than everyone else? So look at ways that you can demonstrate, yes, exactly like you said, what did you do with that job? What sets you apart from the other people that were doing that job? What were the accomplishments as opposed to a laundry list of here's the things that I did that maybe everyone in that job does? What sets you apart?
Yeah. And while we're on that, the letters, cover letters, what should a cover letter look like?
Well, cover letters there's a pretty wide range. I think cover letters need to be brief. They need to be concise. They need to communicate exactly why you're a great fit for the position. You don't need to go into detail about, you know, if you got laid off, this is not the place to put down, I've been laid off and I'm looking for a job. You want to keep it really positively focused on what can I bring to your organization? Why am I a great fit for this position? You want to be pretty brief. And as people have moved more to doing online applications, the cover letters seem to be getting shorter.
Yeah, that seems to make some sense to me. Well, we have more people online to visit with you. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. With your questions or comments, let's go to Jeff in Kenosha next. Jeff, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Yes. My circumstance is a little bit more troubling, I guess, in terms of defining how to get out of it. I owned a manufacturing company and ran it and did everything from running the HR to operating the payroll on my own and managing the employees, and it went out of business in 2007. So that disemployed 15 people, and it was basically I went from relative wealth to losing my house and a bunch of other things, but I grabbed a job for about half what I was making, and I'm back in the job market, and I'm having a hard time gaining notice, and I think it's because of my lack of specificity in the resume and the cover letter. I've done so many varied things, I'm not getting any interest. I'm wondering what your guest might have in terms of advice as to what route she would take. I've run a company into the ground, and now hire me?
Okay.
Well, I think you probably have hit the nail on the head when you say that you know, your resume is more of a generalist resume as opposed to something that is targeted to a specific area or field. And you're right that probably is making employers kind of question, well, what are you really a master of? What are you really good at? I would ask you to think about, what did you love about having your business? Were there certain aspects that you enjoyed the most? Was it dealing with the people? Was it dealing with the accounting and the finance? You know, what parts really were the most enjoyable parts for you? And try to target your resume to those areas. I think also when you have a person who had their own business, that sometimes employers will say, well, you know, is this the kind of person that likes to be in charge and isn't necessarily a team player? And so I think you've got to also look at your resume and say, does this communicate that I am good on a team? Am I good with working other people? I don't necessarily need to be in charge of everything. I can take the lead, but I can also stand back and be a good team player as well. So I think thinking about it in those terms might be helpful.
That's all, I think, all great advice. One thing I might add, just as having looked at so many resumes and helped students with their resumes, is that most of my students, for example, don't have one resume. They might have four or five resumes that highlight different aspects of their skills. So if you're applying for a job in the HR area, you ought to have a resume that highlights your HR achievements and maybe minimizes the other. I don't know. That's the way I look at it. Sybil, is that a...
I think that's a great idea. I would go so far to say that every single application that you look at, every single job listing you look at, that you target your resume to that specific job. What are the things that they're looking for? What do you have that meets those requirements or exceeds those requirements? Why are you the best fit for the job? That's what successful job seekers are doing these days, is every single resume is tailored to the specific position that they're applying for.
Yeah, I think that'll help a lot. And in this day and age, with computers, it's a lot easier than when I first started, and we had to, you know, retype them on an IBM Selectric every time we were doing something new.
Thank you.
Yeah, and good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Jeff. You can join in, too. We're talking career planning and job searching with Sybil Presbridge, Senior Counselor in Adult and Student Services in the Division of Continuing Studies, at the UW-Madison. Pleased to have her with us. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking career planning and job searching with Sybil Presbridge of the University of Wisconsin. Glad to have her along, and certainly really happy to have you listening in. And we will turn to the phones again because Brad in Oshkosh is with us with a question or comment. Brad, hi. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. I was calling once with today's economy, once you actually reach the interview line and cross that line, when you're in an interview, what kind of limitations do you have as far as what you can ask and what kind of limitations does the employer have as far as questions that can be asked or not asked?
Are you asking what are the legal limitations for an employer?
Right.
Well, first of all, I want to make sure I refer you to the Department of Workforce Development website because they have that kind of information on there, and it's very specific and much more complete than I can possibly be. But questions about your marital status, your religious background, your political affiliation, those kinds of things are typically off limits. Limitations for you are more along the lines of, you know, in the interview, don't ask them how much they're going to pay you or how much vacation time you're going to get. The focus really should be on learning more about their organization, learning more about the position, and how you can meet the position and do a good job at it. So it's more about what do you bring to the organization and not what is in it for you. A lot of employers may not mention how much they're going to pay you until way after the salary, until they're making an offer, and that's fine. It's okay to wait until they make that offer, and then you can have some time to negotiate. But typically in an interview, you don't want to be asking things that are kind of directed at, what do I get out of this?
Great, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck to you. And Krista in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. What a wonderful topic.
Thank you.
Great.
I have been having trouble for several years now trying to find, well, any job, but what I would consider an appropriate job for my skills and education. I've done, you were talking about tailoring your resume and keeping the cover letter pointed, you know, rah, rah, go me, how can I help you, that kind of thing. And I do that. And I've had a couple of interviews. And one interview, the lady even said, you're the only person whose cover letter had no typos. And this was for a managerial position. And I still didn't get the job. What else can I do? How can I find out what I'm doing to turn them off?
Okay.
I have several college degrees. I'm very good at English. I have a lot of varied skills, which may be part of the problem. I'm more of a generalist.
Okay.
I'm good at a lot of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, first of all, I know how frustrating it is to continuously be doing everything right and still not land a position. I encounter that pretty frequently in the work that I do. And I know how frustrating that can be to feel like, boy, I feel like I'm really putting out a lot of effort here and I'm just not really seeing the return. A couple of thoughts. One is it possible to do a mock interview, maybe at your local job center or with a career professional or even with maybe a family or a friend who would sit down and do a mock interview with you. I encourage you, if you can tape it, videotape it or audio tape it so that you can either see yourself or listen. For a lot of people, that is a real eye-opener. Is there something that's going on in the interview that might be discouraging a prospective employer? Occasionally, you can ask an employer for constructive information. So if you don't get the position, asking not why didn't I get this position, but what could I do to improve my performance in the interview in the future? That can be helpful information.
How can I be a stronger candidate?
How can I be a stronger candidate? That's exactly right. So what could I be doing a little bit differently? The other thing is, if you feel like you're a generalist, are you presenting yourself as a generalist instead of as someone who's a great fit for that specific position that they're looking to fill? So I think all of those things might be avenues to explore and to think about. The other thing is, I also think it's tremendously helpful to have a personal connection to the organization or to the position that you're applying for. So are you using your network so that you're not a cold person? Are they hiring someone that was referred by someone who already works at the organization? So they're a known entity in a sense. So are you using your network effectively to make good referrals for positions that are a good fit for you?
Okay.
Does
thanks
that help?
For the advice.
Yeah,
okay.
Thanks very much for calling.
Hang in there.
Yeah, keep at it. And while we're at this whole business of networking, I think it is that's a very critical aspect of this whole job thing. And even if you're in a job that you think I'm never gonna leave this job, it's still important to network.
Yeah. Yeah, you should be in contact with a network. Networking, we know, is the most effective way to find and land a new job. I think that we're going to see that as even more important in the economic downturn. I think employers are going to be very hesitant to try someone that is completely unknown to them. So if you can use your network and get someone to say, hey, I've got a friend who I know would be a great fit for this position, and you might want to take a look at them and have them hand your resume to the prospective employer, that can be a tremendous help. So I think networking is really the key here. And interestingly enough, even though we know that somewhere between 65 and 90% of all positions that are obtained are done, it's done through networking. When I talk to job seekers, typically the networking is the area of the job search that they really struggle with the most.
And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the online networking that goes on, other Facebook, of course, but there are many, many other that are really sort of geared for business. I'm every day I'm asked by someone to become a member of one or other online.
Yeah. And
are they worth it?
Well, I think so. I think this is definitely a generational thing. I think the students here on this campus would look at us, kind of older folks and say, mm-hmm. why are you hesitating to do this? I'm on three or four different networks. But I definitely think there's a place for it. I think that it's really important to explore this for a variety of reasons. One is when you talk about your network, a lot of times what happens is when we're in a job search mode, we ramp up our network. And then we find out that a lot of people have moved around. We can't find them. Yeah. Someone that we used to work with has moved and we can't locate them. So by being on a social network on the internet, such as LinkedIn, which is directed primarily more professionally than Facebook, that way you can maintain your contacts while you're working so that you're not scrambling once you are looking. So I think there's a place for it. The other thing is, as maybe a little older worker, it may also indicate to a prospective employer that you're pretty comfortable with technology and the internet and using it. It's a great way to kind of get your name out there and your face out there and make some really good contacts. So I think it's an important aspect of it.
And looking at the sort of maybe the younger group here, one thing I try and tell my students is, for goodness sakes, on Facebook, take off the pictures of you holding a beer with a cigar or something. I think students sometimes fail to realize that employers can go to those sites as well.
Yeah, I think that is a very important aspect of it, especially for younger folks who are really comfortable. They're so comfortable that they're not sort of screening out what might be inappropriate. We do know, talking with employers who recruit on campus, that they go to LinkedIn and they use LinkedIn. So if the younger listeners, if you don't have a LinkedIn profile but you've got a Facebook, you might want to think about getting a LinkedIn profile and keeping it up to date and keeping it very professional.
I'm hearing from a lot of former students through LinkedIn who want that relationship, and that's fine. Work with lots of people that way. Well, let's go back to the phone. And Justice in Brookfield is up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a unique situation, and I'm calling for my brother. Actually, he has a law degree from Marquette. And he's been out of the law scene, really didn't pursue the law career, but did get into mortgages. Well, obviously with the mortgage fallout, he's back in the job market and would like to try to utilize his law degree. I'm just curious if you have any advice for him to pursue that, or what avenues do you think he should be using to find a possible position. And I could take my answer off the air.
All right.
I would encourage your brother to talk with, maybe go back to his professors. A lot of this is sort of depends on the situation. So how long has he been away from law? What were his contacts like? Why did he decide not to pursue that? But I would probably go back to the network, people that are in law, talking with them about opportunities. He also might want to think about, are there positions within the field of law that might sort of get him back in? So maybe as a paralegal as opposed to an attorney right away. He might want to think about taking something that would kind of get him back into the swing of things. So I would encourage him to kind of start exploring what are the opportunities for him in the field. I think being flexible in terms of location, you know, is he willing to move a little bit? You know, that might help him. So I would encourage him to go to the network again and talk with people.
And certainly knowing many folks who teach at Marquette and who have graduated from Marquette, Marquette really does pride itself on helping its alums.
Sure.
So I think your advice is excellent. And if he's also was a member of a fraternity or other group there, to get back in touch with those people that he was in school with, making those contacts and connections is, I think, real important.
Yeah.
Thanks, Justice. Good luck to you and your brother. And Marilyn in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I guess I was calling about being an older person applying for jobs. Seems like they're hiring younger people for positions, and even though I have a lot of experience in a lot of different areas, I tend to, for some reason, not seem to get the job. And right now, all I'm applying for is part-time work anyway. I'm not even applying for anything full-time. Mm-hmm. But I seem to have a problem with acquiring a position, and I don't know, understand why that is. And another thing I wanted to ask is, since I'm African-American, I'm wondering, since when you put on the nowadays, when you go on the internet and you apply online, they ask you, you know, what your race is. And I almost hate to put it down because I kind of want to start, you know, on an evil ground with everyone else. But if I feel like if I don't put it down, then they're going to think you're hiding something if you don't want to actually answer the question. So I do put it down, and I think it, I don't know for sure, but I assume that it's might give me less, you know, responses than I would normally.
Hmm. Well, what do you think, Sybil?
Well, let's take the first question about the age and feeling like the jobs are going to younger people. It's interesting because sometimes when you talk to younger people, they say, gee, the jobs are all going to older folks. So I think, you know, part of this is recognizing that no matter where you are or what the economy is doing, if you're looking for a job, it's hard. I would encourage you to think about what is it that maybe, you know, would make an employer hesitate. Are your computer skills up to date? And are you maintaining an attitude of I'm willing to be retrained, I'm willing to learn new things?
So really asking yourself,
you know, as an older worker, do I come across as someone who's going to be easy to work with, easy to train, have a lot of energy, willing to try new things, and have a comfort level with technology that fits into the workplace today? So those would be things to think about. And again, your network is key here. So who do you know that can help you get your foot in the door at a place doing a job that you'd enjoy? So thinking about your network and how you can use that to locate positions and really get out there and talk to people.
I think everything you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, that's true. But I think I've done all those things except for the networking, because I'm pretty much a loner.
Okay.
And I don't have a networking, but I have also relocated because I was in California for 26 years, and then I moved back to Milwaukee with my family because my mom was sick. But I'm not a good networker anyway. That's just something I'm just not good at. And I realize that's something you should do, but I'm just not good at doing that.
And I can relate to that because I have relocated a couple of times, and I can secretly tell you that networking is a real challenge for me. And I think that it helps if, in some ways, to be new in an area, because then you can always be the new person. So you go to family and friends that you know and say, who can you introduce? Where do they work? Do they have friends and coworkers that you could go and talk to about what they do at that place of employment? So start there with the people that you do know. Look for organizations that you could potentially join. Is there a professional association for your career area? And it's easy to find local chapters of professional organizations these days. Join that association and volunteer to help out. You know, be the person that's in charge of sending out the newsletter or putting together the monthly meeting or whatever. So get involved in a professional organization or any other kind of organization too. I think that sometimes we tend to think of networking as something that you do that's job related, and we don't think about all the other opportunities that are out there for us to do networking. So when you are out, you know, going to the hairdresser, you tell them that you're looking for employment. You tell any family and friends, parents of your kids' friends. Church is a great place to do networking and talk to people about what they do. So I think sometimes what happens, especially for those of us who are really challenged by networking, is we tend to isolate it and say, oh, this is what I'm going to do for this two-hour block at this professional meeting, when the people that are really good at networking, it's sort of a way of life. And they focus more on communicating with this person that they're meeting and developing a relationship. And that tends to help if you can reframe it that way. I'm meeting a new person, just want to get to know them, learn about them, share a little bit about myself. And that can be a much safer, more comfortable way to be networking.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for calling, and good luck, Marilyn. I really appreciate your call. Just a little aside, a good friend of mine, Jeannie Dosh, she and I used to do a radio program together. I was always amazed at her when we'd go to a function, because she would meet somebody that she had never met before. She would the first thing she would always do is to sort of establish a relationship in one way or another, because she'd ask questions about what the person did or what, whatever. And she'd say, oh, do you know so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, I do. And so they're... 4 minutes later, they're old fast friends.
Yeah, and some people are just natural at that. Yeah. The rest of us have to really work at it.
Okay. Good luck, Marilyn.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Mike in Appleton, it's your turn. Mike, hello.
Hello. Your previous caller kind of asked a question I wanted to ask about the older worker. Maybe I can take it a little bit further. How about that older worker who has been either laid off or displaced from their current job? How important is retraining? I've read and heard a lot about retraining, that it really is not very practical, and people find themselves in deeper debt by re-educating themselves, and the jobs aren't out there. That would be one question. The second question is, in today's economy, who has a better chance of getting a job? Is it the generalist or the specialist?
Huh.
That's a good question.
Okay. What do you think, Civil?
Well, the retraining, I think you have to do your research and find out, what in my area, what geographical area, what's marketing? What's marketable here? What can I get involved in that will get me a position? A lot of times, people don't necessarily need to go back and get a full degree. Sometimes it's just taking a few classes, maybe doing a certificate program. I myself executed a career change by doing some volunteer work and did a career shift that way. So thinking about different ways besides just getting another degree. Are there ways to do short courses, online courses, something along those lines that might be less time-consuming and expensive? So thinking about those things, but doing the research to back that up and finding out how likely am I to get a position if I do this? And that's a great question to ask the institution that's providing the retraining, to ask what's their placement rate.
What about the specialist generalist?
The specialist generalist is an interesting question, because I don't know if I have a definitive answer on that. I think that it depends a lot on the field that you're in. Depends on are you a generalist have a great track record as one, and have opportunities to provide those services. I think if you're a specialist, one of the challenges is if you're so specialized and you're less flexible in terms of, am I willing to move? Am I willing to try a different industry or something and still use these specialized skills? That can limit your opportunities. So I think you have to walk a balance there between understanding exactly where am I marketable and what are the skills that are being sought in the field that I'm in.
Yeah. Tough. Good questions. Thank you, Mike. And good luck to you. Gordon in Middleton, it's your turn. Gordon, hello.
Hey, good morning. My daughter's graduating from college this semester. The question that most kids her age have is, since almost all applications have to be submitted online, that's the only way they'll take them, what are some tricks to try to get a face-to-face interview?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
That's a great question, and that's a question that older workers are also asking and everyone else. And again, I'm going to say networking is really important. I think that even though the application is online, I think if she can start working on developing a professional network, that that can be tremendously helpful for her. So how do you get that online application noticed? Well, make sure that it's really good. Make sure it's detailed as much as possible, that it's targeted to the position that she's applying for, and you know, make sure that she's really making all of the right moves on it. Make sure she's got all the spelling is correct and the information is clear and concise.
Those,
will you please try it?
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. That is hard, and I think with just as a note to parents who have children or who are still in college, one of the key things that we found is that they need to have had some internship training.
Yeah.
Sort of one leg of that three-legged stool is activities you belong in, you do in school, your grades, and what your major is, and the third is internships.
Yeah, and I think that that's a very critical piece. And if your daughter hasn't hit her career planning office on campus, she should be doing that. She should be utilizing that service.
Derek in Chicago, we'll go to you now. Hi, Derek. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Actually, good morning. Good show. I have a consulting company, and I do most of the business overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Focus is mostly Europe and Japan. And sometimes China. Well, I'm coming across a lot of resumes, a lot of people that I usually interview for different projects. And what really troubles me and bothers me is that, maybe the times are very desperate and people are simply trying to get a job any way possible. But what I really come across very often, specifically among professionals of between 20 and 35, lack of any kind of personal integrity, decency, honor, and respect. Based in mostly because the people who are trying to pitch me their resumes are interested in sales positions, or perhaps maybe there's just really lack of understanding that people who will be representing my company, who will be dealing with the different cultures, have to be aware that aggressiveness, abrasiveness, and also coming across as a forceful is not very counterproductive to the business, but is also going to kill the deal. And what's really, really puzzling to me is that the degree of self-restraint is simply not there. And I think it really should be a little bit more emphasized in business schools or the places where people go get some getting business education, the degree of integrity, as well as some type of degree of honor, really would come a long way, because unfortunately Americans nowadays in international business come across as a carpet baggers in majority of cases.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very, very sad thing to say.
Well, there's some interesting things about what Derek had to say there, and I think one of the key points is understanding the nature of the job that you are applying for. Does that make sense to you?
That makes tremendous sense. When people are out looking for positions, they should be researching them. They use the internet to look at the organization that they're applying to, and understanding whether they're a good fit for that particular company or organization. So, yes, I think that that's an important piece of it.
And the person, and of course, the person who has some in this particular case, the person who has some international experience who's applying is probably going to be in a better,
that's right,
much better situation than
that's
someone,
right,
who is not.
That's right. And also, I think if someone takes the time to contact the owner of that business or someone who works at that company and say, can I do an informational interview with you and find out more about what it's like to work in that field, that can be very helpful as well to understand that, you know, there are very different cultural expectations, and that's an important part of the application and job search process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just going to take one more quickly. Linda and Alcorn, you have a website you wanted to share?
I do. After being downsized just about a month ago, I went to our local job center in our community, and there's a website called jobcenterofwisconsin.com, and Job Center of Wisconsin is all one word. And I learned that I could put my resume in that environment, and potential employers can contact me. And I thought it was useful, and I just wanted to share that with the listeners.
And thanks for calling. And all those things are useful.
All of those things are useful.
Yeah. And we didn't cover everything, Sybil, so you have to come back.
No. Well, that'd be great.
All right.
Thank you.
Love to have you back to be with us again. Sybil Presbridge is Senior Counselor in Adult and Student Services in the Division of Continuing Studies at UW-Madison. Every one of our lines was filled, and I know there are many questions we have yet to answer, but we'll get to those the next time you're on. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Very much. Coming up, we are going to take a look at antiques and appraisals and auctions with one of our regular guests, Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and certified appraiser, coming up next here on the Ideas Network.